its programs.
C'est au-delà de la programmation canadienne qui était émise par Radio-Canada International, on utilise.
And I'm a sustaining member, and I give monthly on the internet. It's so easy to listen to WGXC Accra.
You're listening to the test site of Acoustic Commons, available at wavefarm.org/listen. Or on any WGXC.org webpage if you click on the listen button. The test site of Acoustic Commons is a microphone in the Wave Farm woods that lets you overhear the sounds of nature, the live weather on the radio at wavefarm.org/listen, or click on any WGXC.org webpage. Click on the listen button to hear the sounds in the woods at Wave Farm through the test site of Acoustic Commons.
Survive All, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survive All shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Arthur and Karen of Hoover, Alabama. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Broadcasting Program. Well, I said that wrong. We are broadcasting live from the rusty wreckage of the remnants of the Arecibo Observatory. Hoping that everybody takes a minute and remembers that this thing has helped us identify a lot of near-Earth objects. So if you want to keep on living, maybe you want to give them some money. All right, starting out tonight, everybody is here. We got some guests live with us. Look, I've already told you people all the means of contacting us. CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com is our main form of contact. Feel free to send in any questions you may have to us now or at any time. We'll answer on the next show. Currently, we have nothing in the bank, so we're just going to start off. Say hi.
Hello.
What's your name?
Chris.
Hey, Chris. Now people know what your name is.
He programs.
He programs. He's one of the makers.
Yes.
Cody.
Bring on the comets.
All right.
Comets. What comets?
We're pray for comets.
Oh yeah, I want a comet.
Brian, how you doing?
I'm good. I don't know.
Okay. Professor Von Mothersbaugh, how are you?
Howdy.
Good to be here.
And then joining us through the magic of Jitsi, because screw Zoom. We have one of our locals, Ben, our other local, Tom.
How you doing?
And then we have two new guests with us tonight from the, what is it, Trixie?
The Mid-Hudson Astronomical Association. That's Steve Dittmar and Jack Chastain. Hello.
Gentlemen. Greetings.
Hello there. Introduce yourself.
Hi, good evening. I'm Jack. I'm a current president of MHAA, and we're looking forward to having some fun tonight.
Cool.
Steve.
Hi, everybody. I'm Steve Dittmar. I'm the webmaster and been a member of the MHAA for just a couple years now. Looking to, you know, spread the excitement.
All right. So cool. You handled all the website fun for the organization.
Yeah, we're working on a website right now. It's not up fully just yet, but it will be soon.
Awesome.
But there is a meetup.
There's a meetup?
Yeah, there's a meetup.
We have a meetup group. Yep, we have a meetup group. We have a Facebook group. We're on Instagram. We're on YouTube. And we have a groups.io discussion group as well. And if you're a full member, we have a Slack account as well.
And what's the name of the entire group so that it's easier for everybody to find you?
Well, the easiest way to go is MHAA, but the easiest way to find us address-wise is one word, midhudsonastro.org, and that'll get you to the meetup page.
Awesome.
Cool. Where are you physically based out of?
Well, we're kind of all over, but when we have in the before times, when we could have in-person meetings, we used to meet at the physics building, the new physics building at SUNY New Paltz, New York. We hold star parties out at Lake Taconic State Park, which is way up near Ancrum. Yep. And we go out all over the place. But when we gather together as regular humans for an indoor meeting, it's normally at SUNY New Paltz.
Okay. All right. Cool. So, around Ulster. Awesome.
Yeah.
When's the last time you guys had an actual star gazing?
Well, we just missed one. Of course, we're weather permitting. And what was it? The 15th of January, I think, Steve. I haven't got my calendar up in front of me, but it was Friday and it was cloudy, so we had to call it off. We do have them every month. We've got one coming up next Friday, week from tomorrow. Weather doesn't look great right now, but this is way too far out. Does look like it might be a little bit cloudy, but that's what the meetup site is for. We coordinate there, and if it has to get called off or postponed, that's where we do it. We do it the closest Friday to a full moon, so that might mean it's on a full moon or slightly before a full moon or slightly after a full moon, but it's within 3 days of a full moon.
You're just trying to trap werewolves.
Exactly. You got it.
I'm curious.
And hey, the state park is a great place for that.
Awesome.
Well, what kind of rigs do you pull out there? What kind of telescopes do you guys usually have?
Steve?
Yep.
You've got a few of those.
Yeah, we get a whole variety. There's a few of us that are astrophotographers like myself, but we've got different setups. Everything from the Schmidt-Cassegrain, the more compact, near reflective telescopes. We got a lot of people with refractors, a little more standard to what might people think of as a telescope, using lenses. We get the Dobsonians, the big sitting on the floor size ones. Those are, I think we have, what, a 14-inch? Is that the one that first night?
Oh,
or 13?
Wow. Nice. Good
14. A couple of 13s. Well, I was hoping this last time. We've got a guy scheduled to come out with a 24-inch Dobsonian.
Yeah. What?
Wow.
I want to see that.
That's a monster. That's bigger than a water heater.
Yep.
We haven't seen him for a while, but we have had a gentleman come out with a rather large telescope that he actually doesn't look through. I think it's a 16-inch. Might be wrong with that. But he sets up two tents, and he spends the night doing astrophotography. And he's got about $250,000 worth of stuff he comes out with. So... it's that's worth the fun right there too. But so it can go down to quite a number of it. It's open to everybody. It's open to the public, free of charge. The only thing we need to have, park rules, is we have to have your make and model of your car and your license plate number. But beyond that, you just come out. And so we have people come out with nothing to look through our scopes. We have people who come out with binoculars and want to know what to look at. And we have, like you said, all the way up through the astrophotography rigs and this monster 24-incher that I hope to see sometime soon.
And the car info, when you provide it, you can provide it when you RSVP on the meetup. event, so it's easy to, you know, provide it there. You don't need to find us separately.
So I'm curious, why go out on the full moon if you're having a star party? Why not go out on the new moon?
The new moon, the moon is something that real astronomers don't like to look at, especially astrophotographers. The extra light in the sky washes out.
I think you had it backwards, so I think before you might have said full moon by accident.
If I said full moon, that's a old bad habit of mine. New moon.
Okay.
New moon.
Okay. New moon. There you go. For
it. Yeah. I was really confused because...
I apologize.
I mean, there are ways to do viewing on a full moon, but it's not usually done for star parties.
That's right.
As far as like moon viewings are concerned, I've heard that half moons are the best time to view because the definition is the greatest, because you see the sunlight or the sunlight washing from the side instead of directly down. You get more shadows and definition. Is that
absolutely correct?
Yeah, yes, definitely. When you get a full moon, it's blinding, and you lose a lot of that depth because there's no shadows anywhere. So,
yeah, I'd say half moon or less. You know, a waxing moon coming in. In fact, one of the most beautiful things you can get is a moon that's just a day or two old, and just the tiniest little sliver. It's just amazing.
Nice.
But beyond that, it throws off too much light. You know, we like the light from the stars. The image that Steve has behind him, which I guess the radio audience can't see, but it's of a nice little, looks like an emission galaxy there, Steve?
Yeah, cocoon
nebula, rather. Yeah. That's, you have any moon, you can't see that.
Yeah. Wow. How long did it take to capture that particular image when you get the fine nebula?
This one wasn't too bad. There's people that will put in hours, like 30 hours, 40 hours on a single image. This one, I think, took me, it was about 5 minute exposures, and I did about 15 or 20 of them. So.
And you're doing a digital, what kind of digital image are you using on that thing?
I use a ZWO. It's an ASI 183 model, which doesn't mean much to most people, but it's a color, it's actually a color digital camera. So it's a one-shot color style.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got like a debayer that thing, or?
Yeah, you do debayer it, yep. Yep.
Oh, cool.
And you can do dithering if you want. That'll make sure that, so you're tracking, you're trying to keep the image perfectly on the sensor the whole time.
Yeah.
But if you dither, that'll shift it off those pixels to different pixels a little bit, so you can move the colors that you're not getting because of the Bayer matrix into the other areas of the Bayer matrix and get a little better, broader resolution across them. You know, the different colors.
Oh, nice. Trick it
but,
out.
Yeah.
Wow, Brian, can you translate that to non-camera nerd jargon speak?
I was going to say, how many people out there know what that is?
Oh, we are all encouraged to use the deepest nerd speak we have, but there's nothing wrong with explaining it, because I don't know what you're talking about. Go ahead.
If you're shooting black and white, every pixel is either just along a scale from, you know, black to white, but through the Bayer image you have different parts of the image are red, some are green, some are blue, and I forget which ones are doubled up. Green or
the green is doubled usually.
Green is doubled up, and one red and one blue. So that's actually, you know, that takes up physical XY space on the imager. Okay. So he's talking about actually processing that, so you can get a better resolution by through time, I guess.
It's literally like taking a filter and putting it over individual pixels. So you've got a green filter over 2/4 of all the pixels on the sensor. You've got a red filter over 1/4 and a blue filter over 1/4. And when you combine those all together, so you have to tell the software which colors are where on this image. Otherwise, it'll not know what colors to make each pixel.
Hmm.
But, it makes really interesting images.
Yeah. It looks like a screen door.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Do you guys do any of the radio astronomy at the meetups?
We are aiming that way. We have had a talk. One of the folks who is a member of both our group and the Maker groups and a few other things is very nicely heavy into radio astronomy. He's talking about getting some folks out and getting his gear out to the next star party. We haven't had it up until now. It's a very interesting aspect. It's another dimension of astronomy that most people don't know a whole lot about, and I hope to see it, you know, gain some acceptance, get a little bit more interest with the group. It's not that hard. It's certainly not as hard as most people might think of when they see stuff that are produced by the big telescopes. It's very interesting, and I hope we're going to get into it a little bit more.
I have a personal interest in this a little bit. I have a software-defined radio that I use to scan radio waves for all sorts of different things.
Yep.
Do you know if there's anything like backyard size and scope that could be used for radio astronomy?
Steve, do you remember what the other Steve had? I'm thinking he was just using a DSS antenna, wasn't he?
I think so, but I don't recall personally.
Yeah, he was if you guys hadn't limited me to two, I would have had him come on as well because of this. But we could do that later if you want. But if I recall, I think he just repurposed a satellite antenna. So, you know, little guy, 19 inches.
Oh, wow.
And, really? And he may have, you don't need a lot, really.
There's a mechanical part to it, because you want to scan your antenna across the sky to differentiate different angles on the sky. So along with the radio stuff, you need some, you know, pretty fine motors.
Well, let's keep in mind that Jocelyn Bell Burnell found pulsars with an antenna that was about the size of, I think it was 14 cricket pitches or something like that. And it's scanned by simply waiting for the Earth to rotate.
Yeah, but that's a nice big antenna.
It can be done. Yeah,
it's pretty much how Arecibo works.
Right.
Yep. All right, I'm gonna have to start talking to my neighbors, I guess.
Yeah, and for that matter, the new Chinese circular antenna.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger than Arecibo and brand new.
Bigger, but
same thing. It's a fixed location. Yeah.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a different skill set, though. I can't emit like the Arecibo could. The Arecibo could actually heat up the ionosphere.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
It was moderately steerable by that big thing that sat up in the top. They could move that around a little bit, and
that's where all the magic sort of aim it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, sort of aim it, but not like what you were talking about. If you want to track a satellite that's not a geostationary or not something that's moving very slowly, you definitely want to have something that's going to move your antenna for sure.
Yeah, otherwise you've got a whole bunch of college students standing in a field with Yaggies.
Yes. Indeed you do.
I was curious, do any of your members use open source tracking solutions?
G-Predict.
For tracking.
Not, I don't know, Steve.
Well, I know we've got one member that's actually writing his own using the Nina stack of mount controls and that kind of stuff. There are open source, people that are using that stuff. The one I use is from ASIR, but that's a more of a closed one from China. But there are plenty that I know. There's a lot of back and forth on which one people like better, and it usually comes with more flexibility and maybe some more bugs on occasion. but it's a lot more flexible, a lot more customizable to get some of these open source ones, and sometimes cheaper too, of course. So
Well, most of us use Stellarium, and Stellarium is a marvelous piece of software, free for the computer, cost a couple of bucks if you want to put it on a mobile device. But that's open source, except that it usually is used on the observer side of things. It's like, I want to see, I'm actually have it up in front of me right now, looking at your sky. And seeing what's up there right now, but it's also capable of controlling telescopes. That I think it's a little more complicated than most things that are done specifically for it. But that's another open source, marvelous piece of astronomical stuff. There's quite a bit out there,
and there's a lot of open source software for the post processing side. So once you've captured your data, there's a lot to do with post processing. You're stacking images and removing noise and all that kind of stuff. And there's quite a bit of open source stuff out there.
And another thing about the radio is that you can synchronize two antennas so that the spacing between a pair of antennas gives an aperture equivalent to a much larger telescope. If you get the electronics tuned up, then you can see very fine detail that is almost in the optical range.
Very cool. Yeah, that's an area that I don't have any experience with, so I'm really hoping that we get some more interest with the folks in the group.
I go out to do a presentation on that one of these days, Jack.
You're a member who's interested in radio astronomy as part of the Squid Wrench hackerspace?
Yes. Cool. Yeah, he definitely is heavy duty over there. He also runs Hudson Valley Digital Network, amateur radio group over in, where's that? High Park, or maybe? I don't know. Is that the Go, what do they call it? CoSpace, I think, is where he holds the meetings. Yeah, really interesting stuff he's getting involved with.
Very cool. Very cool.
So if you're interested in that, check out HVDN.
HVDN?
Yes. Hudson Valley Digital Network.
Is that like the D-Star network?
Yeah, got me.
Digital radio?
D-Star, that's part of amateur radio.
Yeah, digital amateur radio.
Very possible. Yeah, his, I can get you his call here real quick.
Let's see here.
Yeah, well, all of, most of us who have them are. Let's see here. He's K2GOG. So.
Awesome.
K2GOG, that could be amazing.
Oh, that's yeah.
Anybody tuning in right now? We're listening to Jack, we're talking to Jack and Steve from the Mid Hudson Astronomical Society
Association. That earlier too.
Look, I got chicken scratch. Okay. Mid Hudson Astronomical Association.
Our chicken is not the best.
I don't know. Now you have a lot of really cool events online too. Like we didn't talk too much about that, but you host a sci-fi night and
what?
Like yeah. Yeah.
I watched it.
Actually, that wasn't us.
Well, it was your meetup.
It was promoted.
It was
a little bit.
Okay. Yes, we have members who cross other clubs. That one was the Westchester Amateur Astronomy Group, and I unfortunately wasn't able to make it. Our past president, the gentleman who preceded me, is Willie Yee. I was talking earlier about Willie's lovely Prius that he had dressed up like a shuttlecraft. It's a marvelous piece of equipment. But in any case, he is linked in tightly with the Westchester folks, and they had the science fiction night. Willie is also an incredibly accomplished magician, so when he gets involved, we usually have a crazy magic show, and it's focused on Star Trek. He's actually acting as a Klingon magician. I'm sorry, not a Klingon. I'm sorry.
A Vulcan
magician. Okay. I'm sorry, Willie.
don't offend him. A Klingon magician, like the trick of killing someone.
Yes, I didn't know.
Kill the birthday kid.
I don't know how he did it.
Behind this knife.
That's not excitement. I don't know what is. That doesn't draw people out of the room.
There we go.
We're going to need another Timmy.
Mars Night, and I forget all the other ones that were just online only, because a lot of people can't leave their houses.
Yes, so. Well, what we do, we have our normal meetings, our membership meetings, on the third Tuesday of every month. Did I do that right, or did I get it a moon phase issue again? So we have a star party next Friday, and then the following Tuesday... we have our online meeting now. So, and again, open to the public, limited to 100 people, but that's Zoom. We haven't gotten there yet, but last time we got pretty close. We do a half-hour member-only kind of thing where we just go through our business, and then we shift off into some sort of presentation. And this one coming up, I believe, is meteorology and astronomy. So we have a woman who is going to be speaking who is a meteorologist and teaches astronomy, and somehow she's going to link these together, and I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Exactly.
I do a weather report every morning that has both. There's nothing wrong with that.
There you go. So last month we had...
learn how to tell when, you know, we're going to have... how to look at the environment and maybe see... if we might have good viewing that night, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So
cloud cover, atmospheric conditions.
Yeah, how to tell what it means to see a halo around the moon, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
But all of our known upcoming meetings will be on the Meetup site, and you know, you can slip over there and see what the schedule is. We try to schedule a few months out. We have an outstanding person doing our scheduling for us. Alex is just doing a bang up job, getting us out several months ahead usually. And so we've had some really good ones in the past few months, and I think we're going to have a number of really good ones coming up as well. So that's, again, open for everybody to stop in as long as we don't hit our 100 people on Zoom.
100? Is that?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
What we actually do though is we always feed the presentation over to Facebook as well, and then after we record it, and then after all of that's done, since we only get one shot at feeding it out, after it's done, we duplicate it over to YouTube.
Okay.
So
yeah, that makes sense.
You can pick up on those later. You can ask questions on live on Facebook, obviously not on YouTube because it's later, but.
Yeah, we should start doing stuff like that since we have a video component now. So by default. Yeah, the listeners don't know that we have a Jitsi meeting up in place so that we can video conference with our guests and a couple of our remote members. And
That's right.
It's working well, so...
No, it's working really good. Jitsi comes in really clean.
I know someone who used to...
Yeah, this is nice.
...and run them all.
You know somebody who did that?
Yeah, I know someone who used to do that.
Yeah.
So do I.
Yeah, how is that relevant?
He might be within arm's reach.
Just saying, if you want to do that.
Are they bickering then?
They are.
We don't bicker on that.
It's like two little brothers.
Stop touching me. I'm tired of it. Mom!
You're the one who wanted to sit next to me.
Oh my god.
I gotta sit here. You chose to sit there.
Oh my
stop
god.
It.
We're gonna keep going.
I know.
We gotta stop them.
Because, like, kids.
Tired of
it. 5 minutes.
No. There's an invisible wall between us. Do you understand me?
Sure.
Respect the wall.
We're gonna have to turn this radio around.
Okay. Now. You're motioning to me like you're... Oh, are you dying or
no,
you got something to say?
Gas.
Oh, gas. So halfway in between. You're halfway dying, but you're still going to generate some form of noise.
I really appreciate you guys coming on. And we're a bit of a...
Dealing with us.
Yeah.
It's been trying, but we're happy to be here.
But thank you very much.
Do you guys have any personal projects or anything else coming up that you want to discuss?
Not particular, not of interest here, I think. I know I'm going to be building a fort soon, deck. But who cares?
Did you say a pillow fort? Wait, what was that? A porch. Okay.
That's like a pillow
but
fort.
That's exciting. But
it's not as fun as a pillow fort.
Yeah, like a pillow fort, but harder.
Yeah. Put a concrete. Oh, my God.
We've got a few things...
In learning about astronomy or astrophotography or any aspect of it, check us out on midhudsonastro.org. Check out youtube.midhudsonastro.org. That'll take you to our YouTube page.
Give out the emails and the addresses again for any listeners that might be tuning in. We are an actual terrestrial radio station.
Yeah, there is one kind of a project that the group is trying to put together. I don't know if you guys are familiar with a little thing called the Unistellar EV Scope. You ever run into that?
Never heard of it.
No.
It's about a 5-inch... Yeah, it's kind of cool. You should look it up. It's about a 5-inch reflecting telescope, but it doesn't feed an optical device. It feeds an imager. So you have a thing that looks like a telescope, except it looked like a normal Newtonian style. Newtonian style has an opening at the top, a mirror at the bottom. It reflects light back up to a flat mirror and then out the side at the top of the telescope, and you look through that, and that's how you see your image. This one looks like that, except the eyepiece is at the bottom of the telescope, and not behind it, but actually at the bottom along the side of the tube, which looks completely wrong. You couldn't do it that way. Well, what's happening is light's coming in, hitting a primary mirror, going back up to the front like a regular Newtonian or SCT or something, and hitting an image sensor. And then this image sensor is feeding a computer. The computer is doing online stacking of the image, but it's doing quite a bit more than that. It's also able to detect the stars in the field. So you basically set the telescope down, point it at something, and say, figure it out, and it goes, oh, all of these stars match up to this thing, this position, so this must be where I am. It then networks all of that. It can give it, when you look through the eyepiece in the bottom, you're actually looking at a little monitor screen. So the telescope, stacks the images.
His astonishment
and you can get
is because
picture.
He's looking it up.
Right. No.
I'm tracking both. No.
There you go. So the image behind Steve is something that you cannot see with a regular optical telescope. It's too dim.
Not with your eye.
Photographic. Yeah, not with your eye or optical telescope, naturally, what we call naked eye. You can see it with this EV scope because of the stacking that it does. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to do that with a PiCam and homebrew software to do the stacking and essentially work out a way to put that into a nice little tracking telescope. Primary idea, you know, it's going to be great to see, but the primary idea is then to take that image, which is stacked, and broadcast it locally on a local private network so that everyone who is out at our star parties or the walkway or, you know, the Kingston School, wherever we go, can light up their tablets or their phones, connect to our network, and receive an image of what that telescope is seeing right then, and in a stacked way so that you can see the pretty colors.
That sounds
so it's a lot of work.
That's interesting.
Depends on your perspective.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah, we've almost got the camera part working.
You guys were one of the times when we were on here waxing about pies and all the things we use them for.
Don't do it in Java.
Oh yeah. It's looking like come on, why can't I come up with the name? Python is the way to go.
Oh yeah.
It seems like if you're not going to do it in
C++,
is
powerful.
Yes. And it does matrix calculation work, so which is what you need for those images.
Are you guys using OpenCV as a
We ain't using anything yet. We're not there.
Well, you should.
Like I said, we've almost got the camera part working.
You can write some glue code between Python, the Python interpreter, and OpenCV.
Yeah, also with Python, since it's like this interpreted language and it's not as quick as C, if you have some heavy math to do, you can always glue C and Python together in various ways.
Yep.
I use Bash and I take everything.
Get out of here.
Everything counts in my Bash script.
If I may, that is the Unix way. Okay.
Yes, indeed. I'm a shell programmer too, so.
There's nothing wrong with that. That is the Unix way. Input for output for one application.
This show is running on a Bash script right now.
Oh, sweet.
Okay, I'm just going to take everybody and we're going to come to a break right now. Unfortunately, because of my crappy audio cabling, I'm just going to mute everybody so nobody can hear anybody digitally. But the audience is going to get our station tag and our song of the month that we are dedicating to a special group of people out there with a letter in their name. All right.
Which one is that, sir?
We'll be back on the other side of the break, everybody. You are listening to 90.7 FM, Acra, Hudson, Catskill Radio for open ears.
WGXE?
Yeah, those guys.
I'm going to...
Can't you just press this button right here?
Yeah, you could press that
You could mute here, too.
Right?
But we'll forget.
I'm just
are
asking.
Are we letting them go, or are they coming back?
I don't know. We're freeform right now.
We're freeforming, and we're doing pretty good.
I
can
fine,
hear
you.
I think you can write them a note and show it on their camera.
Yeah, but write it backwards so they can read it, you know?
Until you reach the top, if it was worth the uphill climb.
What do we have?
There's
5 minutes
fine,
in?
Fine,
5 minutes
in
what? No, I mean, we're back in five?
Four?
I don't even. How long is your break?
There's a fine, fine line between a fairy tale and a lie. And there's a fine, fine line between your wonderful and goodbye. I guess if someone doesn't love you back, it isn't such a crime, but there's a fine, fine line between love and a waste of your time. And I don't have the time to waste on you anymore. I don't think the
fine line between together and not. And there's a fine, fine line between what you wanted and what you got.
Python and C,
and I bash, and then
what
bash
word
decided
play
to blow up on us?
What wordplay?
Yeah, I know, right? You bash, and then the script breaks.
The script,
I know,
right? Breaks.
That's because it knew.
It knew.
It knew. It was listening. Actually,
it knew.
It was actually listening. Physically, it was
like,
listening.
I mean, do you have this hooked up to the microphone? I could be listening.
Yeah, we're
yeah,
on, but
so
can't hear anything.
I tell you what.
No, we never.
Yeah, I can't hear the remote folks.
I can't
the
hear
remote folks aren't
folks.
There.
All I can hear is us.
Well, can you hear the remote folks?
Well, since we can't hear them, I'd like to ask Chris, what have you been up to lately?
Yeah,
that's a good question. We never hear.
Well, I shoveled a lot the other day. We got
yeah,
a lot of snow, and I spent way too many hours shoveling out of my driveway.
Why don't you even have a technological system device that would maybe use petrol to throw that really
petrol
fast instead of your shoulders?
Well, you know, funny enough, over the summer, my neighbor was selling one with a pointed right at my window for my bedroom. I thought he was trying to tell us something.
And how much was it?
I don't remember.
Like 50 bucks, 100 bucks?
Yeah, it was a couple hundred bucks.
See, that's pretty good, right?
I don't know. It depends on how old and crummy it is.
But you didn't get it, so now you have to shovel.
I bet you've seen your neighbor take that thing out and put it away wet after running it hard many times over the years.
I don't really watch what they do when they do their driveway. I'm usually too busy shoveling. So,
so
I kind
if you
of
don't get a snowblower, when you get to be my advanced age, you just be hobbled around in pain all the day.
How old are you now? 52?
Way
pretty much
beyond that.
You're beyond that now?
Yeah, I think next year I'll probably get one.
You should get
or I've been thinking either that or like a small truck for when I have to move random things.
I was thinking getting what do they call that? When you put loops in your heating system and you put it in the driveway, turn that loop on and just melt the snow melting.
You know, if I ever redo my driveway, I would absolutely do radio heat under my driveway. I would love to do my whole house with that.
Members able to talk? Nope, they're not. They're still dead.
The beauty of that is you can use dinosaur fuel. Which we have plenty of to melt snow instead of using destroying your body on it.
Dinosaur fuel, is that what you're talking about?
Well, what's nice is my driveway is paved, so if I just get a little spot done, the sun starts to melt around it.
Right, yeah.
And then the next day I can just kind of expand out a little bit.
I've never tried. Oh, that's interesting.
But when we have like 2 foot of snow, you know, you got to get that top layer off.
Yeah.
Kind of move something.
You know what makes it easier is going out in the middle of the storm when there's only maybe 10 inches on there.
Yeah, I could.
That's what I do every like 4 or 5 hours.
I mean, I could have done that, but I was kind of like into my project I was doing.
I don't even do that.
Really. Okay, so the question was, what project you've been doing? You ignored that whole thing and talked about snow. What project were you doing?
Now we're back to the real topic, yeah.
Well, I've been working on porting some old KDE stuff to the newer foundation libraries.
What do you mean, like the core,
like some KDE widgets and apps were?
Yeah, like there's this old application KUser that was in Qt 4 with K Foundations 4. That there's no real good user manager right now, so I was kind of porting that forward. But
that's not for yourself. That's for the community.
Yeah, it's for the community. I printed a sponge holder.
A sponge holder.
Yeah, I used my printer for the first time in like forever.
Was that because Cindy was like, "Hey, what the hell do you have this 3D printer for if you're not using it for something?"
No, that's because I was like, "I'm really tired of this sponge being in the sink. If only we had a place to put it."
How did you attach it to the counter?
It just sits there, and the sponge doesn't sit in it.
Oh my god!
So you use
bleeding edge 3D printer technology, and then you half-assed the sponge holder.
Well, yeah, that's what rapid prototyping is all about, right?
Exactly. Go 80% there and just forget the last.
I think we ever guessed.
That's
beautiful.
Hello?
That's like the project.
Hey, what's up, man?
Okay, we do have everybody back on.
We were talking about 3D printing.
I couldn't tell.
Sir.
Okay. So that means I don't know which button fixed everything.
So awesome. Next time it'll be a mystery.
Oh, my God.
Wonderful.
Yes, next time will be great.
I feel like last time you guys talked ill of the Bash script and then it died. And, like, I think it's just you guys are just disparaging it and it just craps out.
That's what you get. That's like, a lesson. This
is what never disparage the Bash.
Yeah, you should be using Z Shell anyway.
Ooh, no, there's nothing wrong with Bash.
Look, it may be a superior shell with automatic coloration and really nice user scripts. You know
it's possible that bug could be fixed in upstream Pulse Audio.
All of your programs distro. Just become my functions.
If you were remember that. Ubuntu, what are you guys? Jesus. I'm sorry.
Oh my god. So how about that snap, huh?
Anyway, right. What now, sir?
Okay, now that we're actually back and things seem to be operating correctly.
So where were we? We were talking about astronomy.
Do we have anything more to ask of our guests?
I don't know, not really, but
I
mean, if they have... Go for it, go!
So, if you were starting out in astronomy, right, and you just want to kind of like fool around in your backyard, do you guys have recommendations for telescopes for people?
You asked the bad question.
That's loaded. That's loaded.
I didn't mean to start a fist fight here, but...
No fist fights. There's a lot that goes into that. There really is. But honestly, straight up honestly, the very first thing you should get is a good pair of binoculars. Yeah. They're inexpensive. They're easy to transport. You can get a reasonable pair for $100. You can get a stupidly good pair for an unreasonable $2,000. The Canon image stabilized things are just unbeatable. But my God, you got to have some stock in Bitcoin or something like that to buy one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, sell half a Bitcoin.
What kind of
recently?
Did you pick up with that, with a pair of just regular binoculars, you go and get at a sporting goods store.
Well, you can see Andromeda, you know, one of our sister galaxies. You can see the beautiful image of the nebula, the Orion Nebula. You can see star clusters. You could easily separate the two absolutely beautiful stars of Alberio, the head of Cygnus Swan. They're, generally speaking, it's kind of funny. Astronomers don't like to really look at stars much because they're kind of boring. It's just a spot of light. But Alberio is gorgeous. Now, unfortunately, right now is not a good time to see it because it's on the wrong side of the sky. It kind of sets before it gets dark. But Alberio is a double star, and one of them is very clearly yellowish or gold, and one of them is very clearly blue. And it is just a beautiful pair to look at just from that aspect. But you could, you'd probably be able to split those pretty easily with a pair of binoculars, but you you wouldn't get, you know, a very good image. Something that you probably wouldn't be able to see, that I, one of my favorite targets, is Ring Nebula. It's a very, very tiny little, looks like a tiny little smoke ring. But that's something that you'd need to have a bigger telescope with. But you'd be able to see where the region of sky where it is and kind of get familiar with it. So the point behind binoculars is you can get a fairly good look at things, but you get familiar with what you're looking at and where it is first and kind of how things behave. The
that's best telescope. I mean, you can make out people are always interested to see the moons around Saturn or Jupiter. Those become clear with a pair of binoculars.
And speaking of which, I was going to mention this if it ever came up, and since it just did, I will. If you guys were to head out after the show or whatever and look to the kind of the west, sort of the west-southwest, a little tiny bit west, a little bit south of west, and about halfway up, you know, from the center of the top of the sky right over your head to the horizon, split that almost exactly in half, 45 degrees, you should be able to spot Mars very easily. Bright orange planet. Really bright, right? Mm-hmm. Well, hold three fingers up. Three fingers up. One, two, three, four, three. Three. I can't do three. Hold three fingers up. Set it. Yeah, horizontally. Set your top uppermost finger on the bottom of Mars. Yeah. And get a good look at what's at the bottom most of your finger. And then point your binoculars up to there and see if you don't see something slightly bluish. Doesn't quite look like a star. You'll be able to see Uranus, planet that we normally can't see easily with naked eye. Some people say they can. I couldn't. I got lousy eyes. Binoculars should bring that out really gorgeous. So you'd be able to see Uranus, wow. And that would be fun.
Would a 5.5-inch Newtonian reflector provide any appreciable detail on Uranus?
Well, there isn't any appreciable detail to be provided.
That's pretty cloudy.
It's a blue ball, and there's not much interesting up there. But seeing it, you know,
yeah.
You need making it bigger than just a spot of light, not too much. You know, you need probably something like a 11 or 14 inch to really make Uranus look bigger, right?
It wouldn't look like anything.
Be much more than a small spot. Maybe it'll start to look like a circle instead of a spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way you'll be able to tell that you're looking at Uranus, because it won't look like a star. It will look slightly rounded. Very tiny. Want to make you think you're looking at the moon or anything. Mars will be considerably larger than it will appear, even though Mars is considerably smaller, of course, than Uranus actually is. But it's a thing that you can see with a pair of binoculars that you can't see really with the naked eye, and that you'll get a better view of in a telescope, but get you there.
I looked at Mars in October when it was quite bright.
That's when it was closest, right?
Closest point of approach, yeah.
Like I said,
Uranus would have been on the other side of it at that point.
I have a 5.5-inch reflector with a Barlow lens. And I think I was using my 10 times magnification eyepiece.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this bright cross-shaped thing.
Wait, cross-shaped? That means your lens is messed up.
There's something wrong going on there. Should be a sharp dot.
Something collimated there, essentially.
Yeah. There's a bunch of math that goes into it. I won't bore you with. But when you say it was a 10 times magnification lens, where you mean the lens, the eyepiece that you put on said 10 millimeter?
Yeah.
10 millimeter. If it may have said 10 millimeter?
10 mil.
Okay.
Not sure the exact measurements. It was probably about 10 millimeters, though, yes.
Okay. Because the way you actually tell what your magnification of the scope is, you have to know the focal length of the telescope. That we don't know right now, but a normal one is probably around, for a 5-inch, it might be a what do you think, 1,000, maybe 1,200, Steve? Depends on the scope.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's just say that it's 1,000. Now you know that you had an eyepiece marked 10 millimeters, so you divide the 1,000 by the 10, and you get 100. So your magnification was 100 times with that combination of equipment. And then you said you mentioned you have a Barlow.
Yep.
The Barlow is usually 2 times, can be 3, can be different, can be variable. Okay. Normally, for most telescopes, you end up with a 2x Barlow. So if you were to put that 2x in there, it turns your 10 into a 5, meaning that you now have 200x. Yep. So
I think one of the things people that are just getting into the hobby don't necessarily realize off the bat is there's actually quite a bit of stuff up there that's much larger than you think it is. And the Andromeda Galaxy, for instance, is like 4 or 5 times wider than the moon in our sky. And if you could image the whole thing.
It's very
so if you get a scope that's like, we have an 8-inch scope, and that's bigger, actually way too much magnification to see astronomy. To see Andromeda. So there are things up there that you can see with binoculars, you know, because they are quite, you know, more bigger than you think they are.
Okay.
Yep.
You could do like a standard DSLR with a 200 millimeter lens, maybe even a little smaller. You could get Andromeda with just a standard camera like that, and you can get tracking mounts that are cheap, the couple $100, not thousands, that you can put a DSLR on with your standard lens, and you can take pictures of things like that pretty easily. But another good thing too, if you're just starting, like you asked, come up to the clubs, join the club, or come up to the star parties, because everybody's pretty happy to share what they've got and show you what they're looking at, and you get a real good feel for the different types of scopes and the different sizes, what that provides you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is one of the draws that we say about the star party. It was ask what kind of telescope we should buy, and say the first thing you should do, aside from the binoculars, is come to a star party and see what's available.
Right.
There are reasons, it really is what you want to look at the most. For instance, Steve has a lovely picture of Mars behind him. There are some telescopes.
I took that.
We're really happy with some of the images our members are getting.
What are your guys' thoughts on the new Mars rover?
I can't wait. Is an event that we are...
It lands in a couple weeks. It's like Curiosity's big brother.
Yep.
About the size of an SUV.
Yeah, it's got a microphone. I'm excited about the microphone.
Oh my God, they must put a lot more sensors on this guy.
You realize that right now there's a robot up there with a laser, and that was what we were always afraid of, Aliens have landed on the planet with a laser.
It can sublimate rocks.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
I wonder
we want robots with lasers, people. That's why we fund NASA.
next, they need to send Spock.
Spot the Boston Dynamics robot.
Definitely.
So we can rearrange a bunch of rocks and build us like rock igloos by the time we get there.
He can dance.
I'm just looking
dance for on Mars. Yeah. And they can have a Martian dance party.
So that that question that what scope to answer, to purchase first is one of the hardest ones to answer, because there's a lot of stuff that goes around it.
Thanks, Ben.
We get it all the time.
Yep. I wound them up.
Yep. Good deal.
Yeah, so the answer is don't get a telescope, get a pair of binoculars.
Yeah. It's a good place to start. Yep.
Before, and we've seen some pretty amazing stuff with it.
Well, a pair of binoculars are like having two telescopes, one for each eye. And this helps with the fact that these objects are very faint. So you're really doubling the amount of available input when you use binoculars. If you look at the binocular primary, it's really as large as the largest telescopes of the of these 18th century. It was really hard to make anything that large, and yet people were seeing all kinds of new things. I don't think they got to Uranus, but they definitely got a fix on the rings around Saturn and things like that, just from the amplification of refractive optics the size of an ordinary pair of binoculars. So you really can get up to speed. You're absolutely right. And it covers both eyes so that you use your whole brain to pull it in.
Yep. Yeah, I actually don't know how large Galileo scope was. Was it an inch and a half or 2 inch?
It was really very small. You know, essentially it was a modified version of eyeglasses. The idea came to a guy that did ground lenses, and then he had a magnifying lens, and he decided to use a second lens, and that allowed him to see the real image coming off of it, which you don't normally see. You see the virtual image, but he was seeing the real image with that second lens. So Galileo and a lot of other people immediately picked up on this trick. You know, that's a very, very clever idea to have a lens looking at a lens. It's quite a bit different of what you describe with the EV telescope. The EV telescope gets rid of that second lens altogether because the sensor is about the right size to capture the real image that's coming off of the primary objective. So that's they call it the prime image. And it's sort of like the transition from single lens reflex cameras with a flip mirror to the electronic cameras that are taking over the field now, where you have
essentially like just a really large CCD then?
Doesn't even have to be large.
It's actually quite small.
The actual image that comes off of the mirror of a reflector is converging towards the point. True.
To a very tiny sensor, and then that's being presented into an eyepiece, which probably has a very tiny video screen.
Yeah. So this new telescope is basically putting a computer with imager and presenter.
To eliminate the meat factor, which used to be, you know, through lenses and glass and all
that. Yeah, but you're putting AI in between that. You get some crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, your eye isn't going to integrate, but these... Right. But the computer integrates, so it keeps taking new and refreshing new versions of the picture, and eventually it builds up the stack, and it bins them down to magnified of the intensity. I mean, telescopes magnify two different ways. They increase the resolution because they're larger than your eyeball, and they also provide more photons, more light. And that extra light is part of the trick. But now, with integration time, you get a third way of building up the image, and these seemingly impossible-to-see objects are amplified to the point where they're quite credible. And like Steve says, they're larger than the moon. They're huge. Andromeda is huge.
That's Tom Ditto talking, who is an expert in diffraction imagery and holds a few patents on such things.
Want to get you down for a talk.
What is your latest? Any latest news on the diffraction thing?
Quickly before the RPI thing,
because we had a few minutes. Why don't you take us out with that?
Well, I had a meeting with Cody today, and we're building a light engine, and the idea of it is that we're going to generate star patterns. That we can use to test the telescope. I have a couple of telescope designs that are novel. They use primary objective gratings instead of mirrors. And now we're at a point where we're going to see just how well they work by making